Welcome to the DMSG Healthcare Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Hadley, founder and CEO of the Denver Medical Study Group. I'm excited today to visit with Dana Jacoby, CEO of Vector Medical Group. Dana is a nationally recognized healthcare strategist who's been a keynote speaker at DMSG in-person meetings and webinars, as well as our podcast. She's joining me today to dive in deeper into topics which we've briefly talked about in a recent podcast interview with Dana. Also, she will address other topics that are driving the latest trends in healthcare. Dana, thanks for joining me today. I believe our listeners know who you are and your role as a healthcare strategist for physician groups and hospitals. But what are the latest topics do you have to share that will help our listeners better understand what's going on?
Yeah, Chris, no, first of all, it's always an honor to be here. I think these topics are incredibly timely for the Denver Medical Study Group community, but just as an aggregate, you know, one of the things that I love about working with Denver Medical Study Group or being a part of your meetings is just the fact that you break down the silos of healthcare. And these questions or these topics are things that I think all of us should be aware of across all categories. And it's just nice to have them all on one podcast for your listeners, just because as we've talked about on every one of these, just things are changing very quickly. And I think being aware of these topics and themes are so important. So today we're going to dive into some of the things that really have been top of mind for a lot of your listeners. We've heard about these in the meetings, or they've come up for me as a strategist in different symposia. The first one being some of the mega mergers, specifically Geisinger and Kaiser, and what is that? Why did this marriage happen? What does this mean for healthcare, et cetera? Second, just really diving, and we can do it lightly, into, you know, AI. Everybody's hearing about artificial intelligence. It feels like it's everywhere in the market, not just in healthcare, but in the whole market, and diving a little bit deeper into which specialties are being most affected, et cetera. And then, you know, last but not least, I think we can talk a little bit about wearables and value-based care and some of the themes that are affecting patient care and patient outcomes. I'm not sure if folks understand truly the breadth of the wearables market and what that means to the overall healthcare industry, but it's definitely affecting change. So I think those are pretty rich, deep topics. It'll probably take us the amount of time that we've allotted for the podcast.
Sounds great, Dana. So tell us about it.
So we'll start with the Geisinger-Kaiser merger. And interestingly enough, Chris, I was surprised at how many people weren't aware that that was happening. It was kind of, you know, you were hearing about One Medical with Amazon, and you were hearing about Oak Tree Health and PillPack and Signify. You were hearing about all these other mega mergers going on around the country. And then it's kind of a funny story. I happened to be in one of the facilities of the mega merger groups of the Geisinger-Kaiser groups. I happened to be in one of the groups when the merger was announced. And even some of the folks in that room, in the leadership, weren't totally aware of the implications of what was being discussed. So, you know, it's interesting when you really dive into the merger and what it means. And I think this has implications for everybody from a single doctor practice all the way up to a large healthcare system. But, you know, the influence and the survival of both of these entities really drove this marriage. And the reason I say that, when it comes to Kaiser, you know, Kaiser has always been known as a West Coast platform. They have a really incredible value-based care background. They have a really deep, rich story in the West Coast part of the United States. But when you go out east, there really hasn't been a Kaiser facility. And so they really wanted to have a national footprint, was what we understood. More importantly, we know that lobbying, we know that healthcare spend, we know that leadership initiatives are built around national organizations, especially now when you think about Amazon, Optum, Walgreens, Walmart, CVS, owning and buying some of the largest Medicare Advantage platforms in the country. So this merger really gives Kaiser an East Coast presence, and more importantly, a national kind of overview that they can use in order to push their value-based care platform, which they've done fairly successfully in the scheme of things. On the complementary side, you know, when you look at Geisinger, Geisinger has done a lot of really amazing things, but they're somewhat an East Coast platform. And I think for them, this is a really great opportunity for them to marry into the Kaiser platform for value-based care models, because that's what Kaiser has really done a nice job building, and Geisinger sees the value of doing this and taking it to the next level. But you know, if you're a single doc, Chris, or a small entity, and if the two big behemoths are merging in order to, you know, kind of thwart the blows of some of these big changes happening in healthcare, I think it's just really important as a local healthcare entity that you pay attention. I tell even my doctors that say, hey, we're doubling down on our independence, I say, okay, that's fine. I'm all about that. But let's talk about how you're going to create a strategic roadmap of who your alliances are in your geography, because the world has somewhat changed. And it really is about influence and survival and how, what levers you can pull. And I think that merger showed us how broad brush, when you can take those big entities and see them marrying, what does that actually look like? So it'll be very interesting to see. But the word to the street is, you know, value-based care, a national presence, and obviously being able to really change leadership nationally with their footprint.
You know, Dana, I just saw something in the last couple of days where BJC Healthcare in St. Louis and St. Luke's Health System in St. Louis are joining in on this as well. So
yeah,
that,
it's really
that
interesting.
East Coast, West Coast, Central U.S., it's going to be pretty exciting, huh?
It really is, Chris. And I think, it, you know, it's that disruptive nature. I think those who want to stay ahead of the curve are going to have a national and even international presence. You know, we're seeing Mayo go to Dubai. And I mean, there's a lot of different things changing right now. But it really is, I think, for the healthcare system, the Kaiser-Geisinger merger and the creation of a new entity underneath that umbrella is going to be something to definitely pay attention to.
And then you go from that to AI, and you know, it's really stepping out into the unknown, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, AI is interesting to me because it really is being talked about all over the place. And you think about how new it is, Chris. The first AI algorithm was cleared by the FDA in 95, but then nothing really happened. There were fewer than 50 algorithms after that that were even approved. And then it was interesting, in preparation for this, I was just doing some research, and literally now the FDA's approved more than 500 AI algorithms. And it's just really changing in certain specialties. For example, of that 500, radiology is 396 of them. So you can see quickly where, you know, diagnostic, imaging, a lot of those things, cardiology is 58 of them. And then it quickly kind of dovetails or falls out from there. So you can quickly see from 2019 to 2022, more than 100 apps and AI algorithms were introduced. I think it's this interesting thing that nobody really knows truly what to do with it yet. In some of the diagnostic imaging centers and things like that, they're using it. Where we're really seeing AI being used is in population health, in some of the health apps that are being created, and we'll see. I mean, it's a very interesting thing. Our biggest challenge for those of us that live in healthcare is having Dr. A, Dr. B, Dr. C, and Dr. D follow the same algorithms, do the same thing for value-based care, you know, promote and present the same data. And so this is something where you could have a very disruptive technology that could start to really create change management around care teams, around a doctor mentality, but it's just not there yet. It's very, you know, even ChatGPT and some of us have played around with it from a business perspective. It's hits and misses, but it definitely is something when you think about that many algorithms being promoted even in the last few years, it's definitely something to pay attention to when the FDA is approving it at that high of a pace. It's fascinating.
Yes, it really is. And every day there's something new.
It is. I think it's really interesting. Chris, if nothing else, I think for our younger for all of our doctors, but for our younger practitioners, just to really be knowledgeable that this probably will be the largest disruption in their career moving forward, you know, the way we practice medicine now probably is not going to be the way we practice medicine in a decade because of this disruption in AI. So being knowledgeable about it and being conversant about what this means to their livelihood is just really important for their futures.
You bet. You bet. Well, you had mentioned something about healthcare wearables and other dynamics that you might want to share about. What's going on there?
You know, we had talked about this even on the last podcast of the fact that, you know, when it comes to the way patients are going to be treated, you know, you may not go to the local hospital if you need care. There may be a wearable technology that you have that monitors your breathing or your heart rate or your blood pressure. And this is probably one of the things when we looked at COVID and one of the biggest disruptions, wearables really coming into the healthcare and IT space were a huge thing. I didn't realize this until about a year ago, but a third of adults now are using wearables in one fashion or another to track their weight loss, their blood pressure, something. So you have this incredible consortium of data, Chris. And the other thing, kind of going back to our last conversation, is what do you do with it, right? So now, could AI be used on this wearable technology? But think about it, even for those of us that aren't huge techies, your iPhone is tracking your steps, you know, your Apple Watch is tracking your steps, or your Fitbit. For folks in the younger generation, they have at any given time 5 to 20 wearables on their person just because they're so engaged in technology. And so for doctor's offices, I had a client of mine, a colleague of mine, who went in to see the cardiologist, you know, routine visit. They went into the office once, the cardiologist handed them the equivalent of an iPhone and said, just wear this, you know, belt around you every day, and we're going to basically track your heart for the next month and a half. You know, so instead of having to go back for a second visit, a fourth visit, a fifth visit, it really is changing the game. And when you think about, you know, a third to a half of the population using this in some facet to track their own health, the other thing that wearables are really doing is creating more intelligent patients that are coming into the office, to the good and to the bad, by the way. Doctors aren't always crazy about the patient that comes in with all of their algorithms laid out, but to the good and to the bad, patients are now much more conversant. They can track their sleep, they can track their blood pressure, their heart rate. And so we're creating a much more intelligent patient base, but also it creates a really disruptive opportunity for remote patient monitoring that we really didn't have before to this level. And then COVID just crescendoed this moment where it took the wearable device, because when you couldn't go into the office, you could use a technology that basically could allow you to track remotely some of your algorithms personally. So it's very interesting. It's all of these themes together, kind of this large marrying of entities, you know, AI and what that means, coupled with the wearables and the patient becoming a smarter patient in every category, are really changing the way we do healthcare at a rapid pace. I mean, a pace that I haven't seen before in my career. I've been in healthcare over 25 years. So just very interesting times and exciting for the Denver Medical Study Group community.
You know, as I listen to you talk about that, it sounds like hospitals are probably a little concerned with their loss of revenue from inpatient services to outpatient services. Are they doing anything with direct care with employers?
Yeah, quite a few hospitals and physician groups and other entities, Chris. That's probably one of the largest themes we're seeing around the country, is just instead of waiting for CMS or Humana or Blue Cross Blue Shield in certain geographies, hospitals are saying, why don't we go direct to employer? You know, I saw this trend, honestly, even personally, 10 years ago. I was with a large medical device and technology company as my employer. And instead of us being, you know, seen by the local hospital, unless it was an imminent event, they put us on an airplane and they would send us to the hospitals where they had already developed centers of excellence and kind of the Sam's Costco model of cost of care. And it was actually cheaper for them to put us on an airplane, send us to the facilities that they had those agreements with direct to employer, than it was for me to go to the local health system and drive up costs in an area they couldn't control. So it's definitely becoming one of the more interesting things. I know the largest employers in the country, because healthcare is one of their biggest spends, are at the table as well, saying, hey, who can we partner with in order to make these direct-to-employer models more prevalent? If you're a doctor's group or a hospital, I think this is one of your best ways to counteract the reimbursement degradation that you might be getting from reimbursement with CMS or the payers, is to think about your largest employer groups in your region and how to serve them with direct-to-employer models. So no, great question, because it absolutely dovetails back to the prior thing, just tangential side note, but a lot of employers also are saying, hey, if you wear a Fitbit and you report that data, we'll give you a discount on your insurance internally, because they're trying to also look at their population of their employee group and see how they control those costs moving forward. So it's kind of all being one ecosystem. But the direct-to-employer models and the direct-to-employer structures are definitely a theme that I think we're going to continue to see increase over the next few years and on into the next decade.
You know, I saw something again yesterday about the number of mergers and acquisitions are back up in the second quarter of 2023 in comparison to 2020, 2021, 2022. There's also some issues or discussion about, and I don't know exactly how to describe this, but it's, I think, a good question for you, about federal control over some of these mergers and acquisitions. What's going on there, or what's in the making as far as that's concerned?
Yeah, it's a meaty question, Chris. It's interesting. So pre-COVID, 59% of doctors were employed by a hospital, a health system, or a private equity-backed entity. That number is now somewhere between 75 and 76% of number of doctors employed. It just happened so quickly. I mean, that's a three-year window, and we went from that change of delta, or that delta of change, I should say. Anyway, I think now what's happening is the regulators are starting to catch up with it. There's questions of what do these mergers and this private equity backed stuff mean to the overall healthcare market. The mergers have not slowed down at all. I think on the last podcast I talked about, if you're in a big, big merger, maybe it's taking longer in diligence. It might be harder to get the debt on the deal capitalized. But honestly, none of the other themes have changed. The average doctor in the United States is in their mid to late 50s. There's still a ton of private equity dry powder on the sidelines. So I think it depends on the state you're in. Like New York has done a lot to look at this legislatively. California has brought this to the table legislatively. It depends on what state you're in currently, but this is definitely something, because of the volumes of these transactions and what it means to the overall bottom line of healthcare. You now have some people in multiple states and, of course, in Washington, D.C., that are starting to ask questions and really understand the implications of all of this change at once. It just happened really fast. I mean, it's been one of those things for those of us in it. No, but we thought, oh, you know, this will kind of follow the same trend line year over year. 19 looked a certain way. You could see the themes starting to happen. And then, honestly, 20 hit. And all bets were off. I mean, it just changed the entire equation from a healthcare perspective, probably for the rest of our lives. I mean, it's just a really different healthcare market than we've seen previously. So we'll see. I think you're going to see this year more consolidation of the consolidators. So kind of like we talked about with the Kaiser Geisinger thing, you might see some big entities that have consolidated already merging. And then you also will probably see some bolt-on opportunities, so a large number of bolt-ons, and that's probably what you're seeing in the volumes of the number of deals being done right now. But it's interesting times. Interesting yeah. Time, to say the least.
You know, we're about to run out of time, but I wanted to give you a chance to share one last thought, if there's anything you'd like to share with our listeners here before we close.
I just think, Chris, you know, we hit some, I mean, each one of the themes we hit on this podcast could be a day long education of what the implications are for the changes in healthcare. So I think for your listeners, and maybe this is something you and I can put in the show notes or brainstorm about, but just being able to stay on top of this for those of us that even do strategy for, I'm not seeing patients every day, I'm doing strategy for a living and it's a full-time job. So I think for your listeners, being attuned to things like Denver Medical Study Group podcasts, being attuned to things out in the marketplace where there's almost a clipping service that gives you insights like this, because if you're not knowledgeable about this and you're just going into your hospital or your medical practice or your, you know, healthcare service entity, and you're not conversant or understand, or under, you don't understand the implications of some of these massive changes, you're just going to have a really hard time staying competitive and staying aware of what's happening because the change is happening so quickly. So I think that's the biggest thing I would share, is just tune into more things like this and really try to find the 5 or 6 sites. You know, none of us have time to go to 20 websites in the morning, but find a handful of advisors or websites or entities that you know you can trust for the right data, because that's where you're going to have to understand moving forward in order to stay competitive.
Dana, it's always a pleasure to have you on our podcast, and there's so much going on. I look forward to bringing you back again this fall, and let's see what's happening at that time. So thank you for your time today, Dana, and I wish you the best.
Thank you, Chris. Always an honor to be here. I appreciate you so much, and thank you for the time.